From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Donald Trump won the election for a number of reasons. But one of the reasons that he won is, in my view, a failure of the Democratic Party that must be rectified.
That was former Democratic Party presidential contender Bernie Sanders Thursday, speaking alongside labor leaders and some members of Congress to a rally of at least 2,000 people gathered near the U.S. Capitol in Washington to protest the recent election of Donald Trump.
When we focus on economic justice, when we focus on social justice, racial justice, environmental justice, when we stand together, Donald Trump and nobody is going to stop us. Let's go forward together.
Many of the protesters, however, celebrated the demise of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, following an announcement by Congress this past week that it would scrap the global reaching trade deal, an action most observers said reflected their understanding that the Trump administration would reject it. Meanwhile, President Barack Obama was in Germany, where he met with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. President Obama warned the president-elect against getting too cozy with Russia.
He ran an extraordinarily unconventional campaign, and it resulted in the biggest political upset in perhaps modern political history, American history. And that means that he now has to transition to governance. And what I said to him was that what may work in generating enthusiasm or passion during elections may be different than what will work in terms of unifying the country and gaining the trust even of those who didn't support him.
And now we continue in our series of discussions about the impact of last week's presidential election, this time with Danny Haifong of BlackAgendaReport.com. So, Danny, looking at the landscape, what do you see?
Well, I see a lot. I see a very surprising development in my eyes. I didn't predict that. I think, you know, you're one of the few people that I know who had the vision to predict that this development would occur, that a Trump presidency would be what we would be facing the next 4 years. And, you know, I see a lot of troubling developments, and not for the reasons I think a lot of the left may believe. I don't see the same type of danger in the fact that, you know, Trump's racism, misogyny will now run wild. I think a lot of that comes from a very deep misunderstanding of exactly what the United States is all about and exactly what, you know, mode of development where white supremacy rests and where misogyny rests is all about. And I think that, you know, right now there is a real opportunity with the Trump presidency, one, to take advantage of the fact that the Democratic Party is no longer on life support. It is virtually dead. I think what people are missing is not just that Trump won, but the Democratic Party lost in a big way. A lot of its base decided not to show up. A lot of its base decided to vote elsewhere, and that included for Trump. It seemed that the Hillary Clinton sabotage of Sanders ultimately put the nail in the coffin in her campaign. And so, you know, we have this opportunity where tens of millions of people, maybe even, you know, tens of millions of people are really not wanting the two-party establishment to control things in the United States, which means that tens of millions of more people are thinking about the system, you know, and we can start to talk about the system of capitalism, the system of imperialism, the system of white supremacy in a real way, in a material way, in a way that talks about the social relations and the need for revolutionary change. And I think that there's also another opportunity in the fact that Trump's base was the only energized population that voted in this election. It was the only one that came out in huge numbers to literally determine what the Electoral College, this, you know, round table right. of ruling class parasites, were deciding.
Right. You know what's, and what's interesting about that is it was the only part that survived, because you had the phenomenon under Sanders as well, and that was basically suffocated as an electoral political force by the theft of the nomination there, and then the abdication basically of Sanders from trying to defend it. So some of those folks certainly went to Trump directly, not even the third party, but to Trump. And I bet in much larger numbers than went to the aggregate of the Greens and the Libertarians. So the formation of, you know, the post-election environment is underway. And, you know, both political parties as, you know, the organizers of political blocks are dead. The blocks are in flux. Mm-hmm. And the political culture has moved, as you say, to the point where we have the concept of class from the Occupy, mm-hmm. The 1% and the 99%. That's about as class conscious as it needs to get for people to understand which side they're on. And also the idea of a rigged system, which is what came out of this political campaign. And people both under Sanders and Trump and the people in the streets all agree with that. They may not agree with the way it was presented as coming from Trump, but they agree with the fundamental idea that the system is illegitimate. So you have class consciousness and a challenging of the fundamental structures happening at a time where also the economy is going to produce unrest and increasingly so. So we're looking at how do we position ourselves for this battle that is rolling out in front of us, particularly while we're fragmented. When we go into the streets, I mean, the question is going to be, are we going to be fighting other workers because we think they're racist or we think they're whatever? Or are we going to be fighting the 1%?
Right. And I think the biggest danger of a Trump presidency is actually not Trump himself. The biggest danger of the Trump presidency is that part of my thinking about why the ruling class, you know, ultimately abandoned Clinton at the very last second is that, you know, there has to be a real deep look at how the Democratic Party has, you know, in the 2016 elections, lost all of its footing, and how the Democratic Party, if under Clinton, you know, potentially was going to be the force that would ultimately burst the entire, two-party corporate duopoly into flames and, you know, actually empower a lot of the left forces and give us more space. And now I feel like we have this opportunity to take some of Trump's program as well as our own, you know, revolutionary interpretation, radical interpretations of not only his program, but also things that he may miss, and, you know, really forward that to a large section of the working class. However, I do think that now that Trump has won, that, you know, we know that the Democratic Party basically owns a nonprofit and foundation, apparatus in the United States. We know that the Democratic Party is deeply, you know, aligned with the entire bourgeoisie at this point. And we know that, you know, a lot of Trump's demands, a lot of Trump's program around foreign policy, around the economy, are completely anathema to what the bourgeoisie can do, not even just wants to do. That's right. Wants to do is simple, but can do at this very moment. It will be something that's totally opposed by the bourgeoisie. So we know that there's going to be a lot of internal contradictions going on in the next 4 years, but we also know that there will be a lot of forces on the ground seeking to misdirect us. And I feel like that's already happening on the ground when I see, you know, some of the leaders of these protests in Boston talk about, you know, we're going to fight Trump, we're going to fight Trump, we're going to fight his racism, we're going to fight his misogyny. And, you know, that's cool, you can fight racism, misogyny, but if you're not talking about the structural reasons why Donald Trump was elected president in the first place, why Hillary Clinton could not muster up the correct amount of support in order to defeat someone like Donald Trump, then you're missing everything. You're missing the fact that the last 40 years have been miserable for black people, for white people, for the majority of white people, for the majority of, you know, for all undocumented immigrants, for the majority of people around the world, the last 40 years right. have been, you know,
taking a
shock and awe campaign of just system breakdown and system misery where people are living, you know, in conditions that they can no longer tolerate. And that is what we should be, you know, discussing. It's not, you know, it should not be feeding into the fear of, feeding into the fear of this white supremacist, misogynist threat. Only organization can really address that. And that has existed, you know, way before, Trump's, dogged rhetoric.
You know, there's a few things that, come to my mind. What the big one is really looking at the idea of fighting fascism by dividing the working class. I just don't understand the arithmetic that's involved there. I guess there are people that believe that they're going to be able to navigate their vanguard through revolutionary conditions that come into being and end up at a successful revolution without the white working class. And I don't know how they do that calculus, okay? It seems to me to be delusional. Mm-hmm. And yet, when you look at the actions that you're taking, you have to be looking at what's really happening on the ground and what the thing that you're doing is going to produce as an output. And if you're not trying to find a common program with, you know, you can have your critique in your meetings and such of the white working class as being permeated with racism and misogyny and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then say, though, but if we raise these demands, they will come with us. And the demands are the ones that these people were supposed to be raising and that have been raised for living wages, for, you know, free health care, for, you know, jobs and, you know, economic investment and infrastructure and all of that stuff. And so why raise the divisive issues and direct them at the people you need as allies instead of raising the whole of it and saying, okay, fine, we are with you guys and with him, because that should be said too. If on these points, and we want to make sure that they get actualized, and we will fight for them. We'll fight on your side if you're for it, and we'll fight against you if you're not. And then you raise this, you know, the naughty list. You have the nice list and the naughty list. The naughty list being, we will not tolerate a division of the working class on the issue of race. We will not tolerate the abuse of any member of our class on the basis of race or religion or anything else. We're all workers. We're together. We're sticking up for each other. You can't attack any of us. And say, so Trump, if you're going to do this, that, and the other thing, we're going to fight you. And we're looking to our brothers that were your supporters to do the same thing. That's how you do it.
Exactly. You know, it's interesting that you bring this up because the left historically in the United States has been afraid of revolution. And I feel like that is what is really holding back a lot of the left right now, is that they're afraid. A lot of the leftists that are just, you know, buying into this campaign of fear, this, I've never understood the question of, well, you know, I'm a person of color. I never understood the position of, well, you know, we have to understand where people are coming from right now when they say that they're afraid of Trump, even when on an objective basis it shows a deep misunderstanding of the material conditions of that. I don't understand how we can engage that and support that when it seems to me that it would make more sense. And if we're ever going to address, because we know that the creation of a white working class, even just saying those three words together, we know that the history of the white working class is through the creation of the system of white supremacy, which was ultimately deemed not just to divide the working class, but to also empower a section of it over the rest of the working class. And in doing so, you create a system that you create a structure in place that only favors the bourgeoisie, that basically contends to you know, to destroy any ability. You know, it's throwing one section of your class against another, not just dividing it in half, but but making sure that one class will always stump for the bourgeoisie. And that's been the history. And now we see the material conditions that right. support that dynamic, that post-World War II dynamic where it was at its climax. We now see that we can
– it's collapsing.
That has collapsed. Yeah, it just doesn't hold true. And that's
they're
why –
they're taking the check. You know, they got a check. They had a check written to them that said white supremacy, that they could go cash at the bank. And now when they go there,
it's not there anymore.
You can't cash it. Yeah.
And so – you know, we don't have to agree on – we can understand that – I mean, first of all, this is – we shouldn't think of this as a white working class issue. I mean, I think it's a total misunderstanding of racism to think that white liberals and, you know, just whites across the spectrum in the United States aren't, wouldn't be compelled to violence at any point against oppressed people in the United States and around the world. That's a ridiculous notion to make it a white working class issue to act like all of them are some sort of, you know, are just ready to join the KKK.
Right.
But also just to understand that if you're going to address white supremacy, you're going to have to do it based on a movement of material demands where you can actually engage working class people and be able to then discuss these internal contradictions on a basis of trust. If you don't have trust with the working class, then you have nothing at all.
And implement, you can do staged implementations of various things in the organizations that are created first. And then as you do community work in the implementation of the work, you create an alternative structure by doing it.
Yeah. I mean, do we want a race war? Is that what we really want? Because we understand that that's something that is very deeply possible, that a lot of revolutionaries have discussed as being deeply possible because, in fact, the left does not understand, you know, the critical times that we've lived under for a while now. And I think that we can make this a class war. We can make this a war of liberation for oppressed classes if we can articulate an understanding of the Trump phenomenon beyond the simplistic notion of, well, all of his supporters are racist and misogynist and that's why they voted for him. Because in fact, they would have just voted for the Republican establishment if that were the case, because the Republican establishment has been that for, you know, decades now, has been the white man's party. So yep. There's obviously something different going on here, and we have to understand it. And then we have to act on it in a principled way, not just go flying out onto the streets, in hopes that the ruling class will resurrect the Democratic Party. That will leave us in a worse position and leave us much more liable to a rise in, you know, fascism, right? I mean, I think that that's what, you know, that's the history of fascism, is social democrats betraying the working class and betraying the revolutionary movement to empower the so-called authoritarian regimes that we're so scared of.
With the cover of an infantile left.
Exactly.
You know, you had social democrats and, I don't know, some people would say Trotskyists, whatever appellation you want to throw at the people that are saying this isn't pure and we can't ally with our allies because they're bad people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, that's what happened on an international scale with the left in the United States and the socialist bloc. And that's what led to where we are now, as a matter of fact. It was a decision that was made by people, some people somewhere, to get exactly here. And, you know, hopefully people that are watching what's developing are understanding that while this stuff is in motion, it's heading someplace. And, mm-hmm. you know, to what extent are you going to direct events? And what is the wherewithal that you're going to be in possession of when it's time to fight?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And another interest, I think there are two other interesting things that I've noticed since the post-election election development of Trump is Sanders himself has come out with a very interesting position on all of this. I think that he, you know, as disappointed as I was and how he basically sold himself out to the Clintons.
He nailed it, though. I saw that piece.
Yeah, he's come out and basically articulated what I think, you know, it's elementary and it's, you know, but it's the correct way to go, where he discussed with on the corporate media that I will support Donald Trump for the demands that will benefit working people. And then he said, I will not support Donald Trump on the issues of racism and misogyny should he employ them in policy. And that is exactly the position.
Yep.
It's so simple, you would think. It's so simple to articulate that.
Yep.
And, you know, and then hold his feet to the fire, because that's the position Trump is in.
No matter what Sanders intended by doing that, or what people that had him do that, if that's what happened, think is going to come as a consequence, that might be the single most valuable act that he committed over this whole period, is to put that out there now, because that and he also spoke basically about the people that lifted Trump up as workers, who had valid demands that they made and responded to because Trump promised it, et cetera. So those things that he was going to hold their feet to the fire with, he showed that he had common cause with the that quote unquote white working class that lifted Trump up, and that's something that I think is absolutely what needs to be done.
Exactly, it just shows that there is this opportunity right now to really develop the movement, to really hope, you know, Trump is in this situation that I think is completely new to the two-party corporate duopoly's history, where Trump right now has won the presidency based on a lot of things, and mainly we have the corporate media is even acknowledging it. He's done it based on an quote-unquote anti-establishment posture. His economy, his foreign policy rhetoric has inspired a lot of people, and that needs to be looked at. And he's now going into a White House that, you know, that is the organ of oppression for the, you know, the global capitalist system.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, posturing right on the left saying, oh, well, look at his cabinet, look at the people he's considering, and, you know, the Boltons, the Christies, the Newt Gingriches, and those are all bourgeois Republican establishment figures, sure. However, you know, first of all, objectively, where else does somebody who's seen as an outsider, whether you think of him or not, seen as an outsider by the entire bourgeoisie, where else does he get his cabinet? Second of his base right now is the most important thing.
That is
the most critical factor that is driving still his presidency.
That's right.
So if he is to sell out to the establishment, it's possible. You know, we can't say it's out of the realm of possibility.
Right.
Will his base stomach that? Will they just let it happen? Second of all, if he doesn't, if he's not controllable, if he's someone, you know, that the ruling class gambled on, but, you know, made a miscalculation, which I think is actually the correct, you know, analysis of the
situation. Most likely, I'd say. Yeah, we can't prove it yet, but most likely.
Yeah, what will they do? You know, what will the ruling class do?
Well, here's the thing. We're getting a hint of that, okay? And you're right to describe that. Trump assembled a discreet set of discrete constituencies into enough to win the election, and the country is becoming on its own more and more ungovernable by the day, and you have a unity of the leadership of both parties to make Trump's presidency fail, and to try to stop it. I mean, they have underway, you got 2 million signatures on a petition to tell the Electoral College, forget what you're supposed to do, vote for Hillary Clinton. And that's a serious attempt, basically, at an extra constitutional coup. And then in addition to that, you know, if and when that fails, then you've got the early joint session, early January joint session of Congress that has to ratify the Electoral College with the leadership of both parties in opposition to Trump. And then if that fails, that's like the first week in January. If that fails, he's still got to live to the 20th. Okay. And so then once he takes office, assuming that that happens, you know, through this navigating this pond full of crocodiles or whatever, then he's got Congress, trying to de-imperialize the presidency. All of a sudden, they're going to take an active role in governing and all this crap. He's going to need a political base, okay? Mm-hmm. And the only available political base, the only political base he can construct out of a new set of discrete constituencies are the place where the masses are, which would mean jobs and peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we need to be doing, I mean, if we build that across our class, no matter what he intends, he's going to have to adopt it, or he's going to have to openly join the elite and crush us.
Yeah, and be crushed. I mean, because at the end of the day,
he's out. He's Saddam Hussein or you know, whoever. Somebody that was their boy one day is now dead on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think at this point, what I see as a deep resistance among the left of acknowledging some of these points, some of this material reality is, I think, a fear of building a movement on conditions that are unfamiliar, but ultimately are conditions that have a deep history in the breakdown and crisis and stagnation of the world capitalist and imperialist system that really speaks to everything that is going on right now, and it speaks to just the Trump phenomenon in general. And there's a deep fear of addressing that, of really tackling that, because it means you have to go after the bourgeoisie. It means you have to understand, you have to really expose what the ruling class, the primary contradiction of the system. You have to really expose it, and you're going to have to muddle through waters that aren't pure. I think there's notion of this purity that we have to have on the left, and you know, it's gotten us to nowhere. Purity has gotten us nowhere. It has basically it has basically made us abandon a lot of the principles and a lot of the or political orientation that we need to really address this very moment right now. And I think that, it still will hold true that Trump, regardless of what people may think of him individually, regardless of, the deep contradictions that exist in his individual person, from being a member of the ruling class himself, all basically the corporate media exposed everything about him that we needed to know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to think that he is the one. Like, we're not saying that he is the leader of some working class movement, but everything that he expressed over his campaign, ultimately did not come from him. It came from a base, and now we have to acknowledge that a lot of it was working class that wants some real material demands to come into fruition. And if we do not respond to that, then the left will forever be on this on this plane to nowhere, which ultimately means a plane to the Democratic Party, because right now the Democratic Party is looking for a way to resurrect. They're looking at 4 years of scaremongering and fearmongering the left and all the entire liberal base into a frenzy against Trump, And then in 2020, here comes Michelle Obama, Elizabeth Warren. Here comes, you know, this bastion of progressivism right back. Here comes all the apologies. We're back. We're the Social Democrat. We're the left party again. Come back to us. And that's the real danger right now. If people don't see that's the real danger right now, then, you know, then we have a lot of work to do.
Danny, thanks a lot. A pleasure as always.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.